When you think of cloud computing, you might think innovation, efficiency, connectivity. But those aren't words that are typically top of mind when thinking about securities regulation. Yet, FINRA was an early adopter of the use of the public cloud for critical business functions. Today, we're joined by Chief Information Officer Steve Randich to discuss how using the public cloud has fundamentally changed FINRA's technology strategy. Welcome to FINRA Unscripted. From New York, I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. I'm very pleased to be joined today by Steve Randich, our CIO here at FINRA. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Caitlin. Very happy to be here.
So, Steve, I just wanted to start out by asking you about something interesting I found when I was looking at your LinkedIn. And it said on there that you had a very promising career ahead of you as a dishwasher. Hobnail restaurant in Naperville?
In Naperville, Illinois, yes.
I wanted to quote something. It said it was the best job of your career.
Yeah, I don't know if I articulated why, but it's pretty simple. I was completely in control of my job. There were inputs, dirty dishes, and outputs, clean dishes that needed to be stacked, be put back in the restaurant. And it was satisfying because I could measure my output and I had total control of my productivity.
So,
great job.
Instead, you ended up in an industry where you have very little control.
A lot of complexity, a lot of navigation, a lot of issues, yes.
How did you end up in tech?
I knew I was going to be in tech very early on. My dad worked at Bell Labs. I got in high school into some after-school night programs where we started programming. And this goes back to the early days of the computer industry when there were teletype machines as opposed to keyboards and terminals and PCs like we have today. But I got into that in high school and knew by the time I was a junior in high school, I was already programming in at least one language, that I wanted to get a computer science degree. And so I wasn't one of those type of people that go to college and then figure out halfway through what you want to do. I went to college specifically to get a computer science degree, and I chose the school that I went to because they had a very good computer science degree, and I came out of the school programming in five languages and hit the ground running when I hit the job market, so it was planned.
Well, FINRA is very fortunate that you ended up in technology and were able to resist that siren song of the dishwashing life. There have been a ton of changes in FINRA technology since you joined. I think one of the most noteworthy changes, of course, has been the adoption of the cloud. I think that was one of the first things you pushed for when you joined in 2013. Is that correct?
Yeah, I joined in March 2013. We went to the board by July with the concept of moving all of our market regulation, surveillance, data, and systems to the public cloud. And then by February of the following year, so 11 months into the job, delivered to the board for approval a business case to do just that. And we started it in very early 2014 and completed it in mid-2016.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. We have a lot of stuff on our website already about that actual transition. So we'll include some stuff in our show notes for any listeners who want to know more about the transition itself. But today I wanted to focus on how we're using the cloud now that that transition is done. So first things first, I wanted to ask, what kind of data do we store in the cloud?
Mostly all of our data at this point, all of the market events that we surveil, that we collect from both the exchanges as well as the broker-dealers, the orders, the cancels, the trades, market data. Pretty much every market event that happens in the equity markets and most of the option markets we collect on a daily basis. That data, on average for 2018, has been 50 to 60 billion market events per day. That's a large number by any scale
or any standard. Is there any context you can give for just how much? How could we visualize that?
The thing about FINRA is that we don't do same-day trading surveillance. We do historical surveillance. So we look at market manipulation patterns over a period of time, which could be days, weeks, months, or quarters. which means that we need to not only take in and analyze the data that happens every market day, but the history of that over the course of multiple years. And as a result of that, we now have over 30 petabytes of data in the public cloud, in Amazon Web Services, to do our surveillance and analytics on. And if you think about a single petabyte of data, if that were like MP3 songs, that would require 2 million years to play through that once. That's just a single petabyte. We have 30 petabytes in Amazon Web Services, which means that it would take 60 million years to play music of that volume once through, which would take you right back to when the dinosaurs became extinct on the Earth, a very long time.
Yeah, that's insane. I don't even know if there's that much music that's been made to play for that long. So this data we're talking about, it's like the mission critical data. It's everything pretty much. And so when people are talking about big data, is this what they're talking about?
Yeah, this is quintessentially big data. The amount of data that FINRA processes is large by any measure. So you could look at insurance companies, credit card companies, credit agencies, any of the firms that you would think that are out there that are crunching a massive amount of data, big global companies, generally aren't having the amount of data that we have because of how much data that we collect from the markets every day. And as a result of that, it necessitated the move to the public cloud. And it necessitated the move to big data, open source software that evolved in the last 5 to 10 years to solve this exact problem. So historical proprietary commercial databases from companies like Oracle and IBM and EMC didn't and don't have the scale to support the amount of data that we have to collect, store, and surveil on a daily basis. Open source projects evolved over this period of time to meet that need. And so FINRA adopted those technologies. And there's a synergy between the open source big data software, which we use, and the public cloud. Because the public cloud then allows these open source big data software products to scale horizontally to massive amounts of servers to host our data processing and storage on.
So just wanted to pause real quick. What is open source? How does that work for those who aren't familiar?
So historically, software was written by companies on a proprietary basis, IBM, Oracle, EMC, Sun, you name it, and then made available on a license basis to companies that want to use it. So if you want to put up a database and give your employees or your clients access to that database, you would buy some proprietary hardware from HP, IBM, or Dell, and then put a proprietary database from Sun, Oracle, or IBM on that server, and then proceed forward on that basis. Open source is not owned by any one entity. It's made available free on the internet, and then it potentially allows hundreds or thousands of software developers, programmers, to work on that software and make it better, make it more scalable, more reliable, more secure, better functionality. And then certain vendors, over time, create commercial distributions of that so that firms like FINRA don't have to worry about upgrades and maintenance and security patches. The key point here is that you're not dependent on commercial vendors in a traditional sense, and that you're getting a community of developers working on the software and making it essentially a commodity.
You mentioned security in relation to open source, but I wanted to bring that in relation to the cloud. I know that's one of the biggest concerns some people have. How do we make sure our data is secure in the cloud?
Well, it's funny. When we started down this path of going to the public cloud in 2013 and having discussions with the firms and the exchanges that we regulate, as well as our board of directors, inquiring minds regarding the security of the public cloud. Because as we all know, public cloud generally has been characterized as insecure because your data is out there in some undisclosed, publicly available server in the sky, right? When in fact, it's not that at all. We prefer to use the term virtual private cloud because you can get all the advantages of having massive scale across many data centers and broad geographical locations to scale out horizontally, but they're in managed data centers that are very secure, and that's where the term private comes into place. But to get to my point here, when we originally went down this path and had to address the inquiring minds regarding, okay, you're taking it out of your private data center that you can manage and control who's coming in and out of it on a minute-by-minute basis and putting it out in these broad, virtually available data centers in the public domain, how are you going to keep our data secure? So when we originally addressed that question, again, back in 2013, 2014, we used a slide deck that walked through using basic logic and reasoning that it won't be any less secure than what we're doing currently. And from a physical and logical security standpoint, it's as good or better than what we're doing today. And that satisfied enough of the inquiring minds to proceed. Then about halfway through the transition in the fall of 2015, it became obvious to us when we were implementing our systems in the public cloud, specifically in Amazon Web Services, that it was actually more secure than what we were doing before. And coincidentally, at that time, many of the industry pundits came forward and said, CIOs, you need to realize that this is actually more secure than what you're doing today, by the way. So this was 2.5 years ago, and it's only gotten more secure since. So specifically, there's things that you do in the public cloud to protect your data that are just not affordable in a private data center. There is a term called micro-segmentation, where every server in the public cloud, when designed properly, is firewalled off from every other server. That's just not economical to do on your own in your own data center. Another example is that we encrypt all non-public data that we put in the public cloud. We were not doing that in our data center. In fact, we decided in the 2012 timeframe to encrypt highly confidential data that we were hosting in our private data center. And we went with a proprietary vendor solution to encrypt that data, again, in our private data center. And it proved to be very non-performant and very expensive, and the project was late as a result of that. Now we encrypt all non-public data, regardless of its level of confidentiality, in the public cloud, all the time, everywhere, no question about it. And that's extremely secure. And we use very high levels of encryption keys. For example, the encryption method that we use, a typical hacking program that would guess passwords and start from the top of the alphabet and numbers and go through every possible password key that could be available to unlock that encrypted data, it would take the largest supercomputer commercially available more than the Earth's age to go through half of the possible passwords before unlocking it. So it's completely secure. And these are things that we weren't doing, and most all firms that are continuing to do their data storage and processing within their own data centers do not encrypt all their non-public data. They just don't do it.
So I think it's pretty public that we use Amazon Web Services. And in fact, they've used us as a case study in the past. Why? What makes our use of the cloud something that Amazon Web Services can spotlight?
That's a great question. And one that I often ponder because, you know, FINRA is a medium-sized company. We're not a global giant company like Coke and IBM and so forth. And so why have we gotten so much attention from Amazon Web Services? And I think there's three answers to that. One of them is that we were an early adopter. We were a pioneer in open source, big data, public cloud computing. No question about it. Doing what we did beginning in 2013 and 2014 was pioneering by any definition. And they saw our aggressive desire to do this, and they partnered with us because they thought, why not get with an innovator and a pioneer in this space to help us, Amazon, develop and mature their offerings for clients like FINRA. Second one is we're in the financial service industry. And the financial service industry is 40% of the IT spend in the U.S., but also the most conservative in terms of adopting new technologies. So here we are, financial services company, and a regulator, by the way, even more conservative. And we're stepping out there and pioneering. Let's get behind them because of FINRA. And we've often heard this quote, if FINRA can do this, why can't we do this, right? Like, you're the financial services regulator. You're out there doing this, putting your data in the public cloud, then anyone can do it. And then the third part is that we process massive amounts of data. By any definition or standard, we're up there in terms of big data. And public cloud is largely about making it economical to store and process huge amounts of data. And for FINRA to be a very great example of that, to be pioneering in this space, you know, just makes that partnership so much more important for Amazon.
And I think, in fact, earlier this year, we had a record day for our data processing.
Yeah, back in March, we took in over 100 billion market events in a single day, which is a big number. Our average, as I said, is in the 50 to 60 billion market events per day. So this almost doubled our daily average. And just to put that in context, our average in 2017 was 37 billion. So the peak that we hit in March because of the market volatility was three times the average that we experienced throughout 2017.
And the scalability of the cloud makes us able to kind of do this triple last year's average seamlessly, right?
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of the cloud is that you can automatically, without any human intervention, scale up your environment, basically automatically add servers to process these peaks, and then automatically decommission it all when you don't need it, and don't pay for it when you're not using it. So it's very much like a electric utility model. You need more electricity, you pay for it, you turn the lights off and the equipment off, and your power usage goes down and your bill goes down. It's exactly what we experience with our Amazon environment, in that it automatically scales up when we have to handle these peaks and then automatically scales down. And there's no human intervention. We discover and learn about these peaks hours, days, or weeks afterwards when we review the operational logs of what actually happened, the economics of it, you know, not having to provision for every day being a 100 billion market event day, which you would have to do because if you have an on-premise environment, you have to have the capacity to handle your peak. You know, all IT leaders and managers know that you have to provision for peak, provision for peak. Key thing, right? When you're in the public cloud, you no longer have to provision for peak because the peak automatically comes to you and gets wound down when you don't need it. And there's actually a beauty even on top of this is that we can provision for those peaks using spot pricing. So in the Amazon cloud, the price of the processing varies based on demand. So we can look at our service level agreements. In other words, when do we actually have to process this peak? Do we need to do it by 4 p.m., 8 p.m., or 2 a.m. in the morning? And we say, if we can run this at 2 a.m. in the morning without impacting our business, and the spot pricing at 2 a.m. is better than 4 p.m. or 8 p.m., let's schedule it to run at 2 a.m. and get better pricing.
That's incredible. So just to change gears a bit, I recently heard you talking about a data lake. I just wanted to talk to you about a little bit about this. What is a data lake?
Think of it as a database. You know, so historically, as I mentioned earlier, proprietary databases have a fixed number of servers that they run on, and they have a fixed volume or capacity. It's fairly large and gets larger all the time, but nowhere near large enough to handle the amount of data that FINRA processes daily, let alone has to handle to do historical surveillances across days, weeks, months, and quarters. And so I would characterize those proprietary databases as data ponds. A data lake is a much larger volume of data that gets facilitated by using open source big data software databases on the public cloud, where we can put petabytes of data available immediately to our market regulation surveillance analyst to go query to look for market manipulation and fraud.
So instead of taking your queries to individual data ponds, you're able to just query the whole lake at the same time?
You can query the whole thing at the same time. So there was an example a month or so ago when we were demoing the capabilities of the software. And it was interesting because there were a number of analysts in the room and they wanted to look at particular scenarios that they had familiarity with. So let's look at everything happening in stock XYZ between 358 and 359 between February 9th and 11th of this year. And all that data available in the data lake, online, accessible. And the query comes back in a few seconds with, here's the scenario. That would not have been possible in the previous software architecture.
How long would it have taken in the previous architecture?
It potentially would have required human intervention to empty the pond and refill it with water from a backup. It would potentially require a reworking of the query because it wouldn't be feasible to complete it in minutes, hours, or days. And now all the data is available to all analysts for all market scenarios for the last 5 years, and it all comes back in seconds to minutes.
That's crazy. So when FINRA market surveillance analysts are trying to look at patterns of data, they don't need to set up a special environment. They can just run it in the data lake instead?
Correct. And that's probably one of the biggest benefits is that we've eliminated a lot of the human intervention, the hamsters on the wheels to make all of this work in a way that doesn't disrupt our business.
And just so the listeners know, we're going to talk to Tom Gira, our head of a market surveillance, more about this and his team's use of the data lakes and our cloud computing on our next podcast. So stay tuned for that. So Steve, I know you work closely with Tom's team. You're also working with other regulators to try to help them. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're advising a number of other regulators who have similar problems, who have a desire to move to open source big data software, have a desire to move to the public cloud for all the reasons and benefits that we've talked about here. And so we're advising other regulators to help them with their journey.
Great. Well, we're running out of time, but there's still a ton we want to talk to you about. So we will definitely have you back again soon. In the meantime, if anyone has questions for Steve for future episodes or any other questions they want us to address, feel free to email us at finraunscripted@finra.org or reach out to us on social media. But that's all for today. I'm Caitlin Kiernan from New York. Until next time.
Please note, FINRA podcasts are the sole property of FINRA, and the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. The content of the podcast does not constitute any FINRA rule or amendment or interpretation to such rules. Compliance with any recommended conduct presented does not mean that a firm or person has complied with the full extent of their obligations under FINRA rules, the rules of any other SRO, or securities laws. This podcast is provided as is. FINRA and its affiliates are not responsible for any human or mechanical errors or omissions. Parties may not reproduce these podcasts in any form or reference them in any publication without the express written consent of FINRA.